Welcome everyone to the Region 4 Planning and Policy Council meeting. My name is Kirby Fye from the department. If you joined via WebEx, you might see me as, well, you will see me as Amy Holland, but I'm Kirby Fye. I just borrow her name for all meetings. Just a few housekeeping things. Per Executive Order 51, this meeting is recorded since it's being held virtually. And it will be posted to the department website within the next 2 days. So just wanted to let you know and remind you of that. Also, if you're not speaking or presenting, please be sure to mute your phone or your computer, or if you join via both, because sometimes we have to do that. Just make sure they're both muted so that we don't get a whole lot of feedback or background noise. Robin, I'm going to go ahead and go through the attendance. And then we can come back to it at the end as well for those who join during the meeting. So I have, like I said, Kirby Fye with the department, Angie Thompson, Region 4 Vice Chair, Avis Easley from the department is on the call, Elliot Pinsley, Kubra or Cal Bryant, Rama Muhammad, Rusty Totten Emerson, Zach Blair, I also see, and Robin Nobling, Region 4 Chair. I also see a few individuals who called in. If you don't mind, if I haven't stated your name, would you please state your name and introduce yourself?
Gloria Morrison, Nurses for Newborns.
Sabine Johnson, Chair of the Children's Committee.
Willie Wong, National Fire Department, National Gov.
Can you state your name again? It just cut out briefly.
Willie Roth.
Oh, hi. Willie. Welcome.
HIPAA, Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services.
Have I missed anyone else?
Patrick Starnes, Region 4.
Hey, Patrick.
Hello.
All right. Well, Robin, I'm going to hand it over to you, passing the baton.
Well, thank you, and thank you, everyone, for our continued need for patience with technicalities. So I'm hoping at least we get a lovely day today. I'll say that much. Not too hot, and so makes life easier to take, definitely. I want to welcome you to Region 4. And we've gotten our attendance taken. I want to recognize, first of all, Avis and Kirby from the department for always being such great hosts. And I want to thank Amy Holland, too, because she sent out a lot of information. We're going to hear from Kurt and Zach later, and we really appreciate you guys being on the call on the WebEx. So I want to give a shout out to our vice chair, Angie Thompson. Was Rusty on? Is our secretary on?
Yep, I'm here, Robin.
Thank you, Rusty. I'm so sorry. I hope you got that email that I sent.
I did.
Great. And then Servine with our children's chair. Did I hear Evelyn Yergin on? I know she was trying to get in. That was our adult chair, and then Elliot for our legislative. So I want to thank those people for what they do at the meeting and in between. So if we can get started following our agenda, Rusty, would you, please present the minutes and ask for a review?
Certainly. Robin sent out the minutes from last meeting. In our email earlier today, has anyone had a chance to look at the minutes and recommend any changes or corrections? Robin, I am hearing nothing.
I'm getting crickets too.
This is Elliot. I just had to pull up the document to make sure I was looking at the right version, and I make a motion to accept the minutes.
Thank you.
And Elliot, I got your name right this time around?
Oh, honestly, I didn't even look, but I think I provided some edits. But yes, it's correct. Thank you.
Okay. I wanted to make sure.
I appreciate it. Everybody messes it up, so don't worry.
Okay. And if we can have a call for a second, please. Somebody like the second, Elliot's?
I'm second.
And who was that?
Willie.
Willie, thank you. Willie Ross. Rusty.
Okay.
Is our second. Do we have any discussion, anyone?
Sorry.
Okay. You can call for the vote if you'd like, Rusty. If we hear, why don't we just call for nays? And if we don't hear any nays, then we, letting you all know, if we don't hear any nays, then we will consider it passed unanimously. So, Rusty, if you'll call for that.
Sure. Do we have any dissent? Any noes? Speak up now. Going once. Going twice. Minutes will be recorded.
Right. Thank you, Rusty. Really appreciate that. And so moving forward, Kirby has our department update for us, and we are eagerly awaiting that. So do please share.
Thank you. Rusty, I'm going to go ahead and email this to you as well, so you can just copy and paste it and put it in your minutes. I have some links in here, too. Hi, everyone. Kirby Fai again with the department. Just a few updates. The first update concerns our joint annual reports. Robin, Angie, Rusty, you'll be receiving an email from me within the coming weeks, but I just wanted to put it on your radar since it'll be here before we know it. Each year, a joint annual report is produced and delivered to the governor and state legislature to list accomplishments, challenges, and plans for the future. The joint annual report is a collaborative effort between the department, the regional councils, and the statewide council. Regional council information for the FY 2020 joint annual report, so that's July 1, 2019 through June 30th, 2020, should be sent via email to kirby.fai@tn.gov no later than September 18th. Like I said, I'll send out another reminder email as well. Year two, FY 2021 of the three-year plan is in progress. Regional councils will have an opportunity to review within the coming weeks. Development of the FY 2021 mental health block grant is underway. Statewide and regional councils will also have an opportunity to review soon. The 2020 legislative summary is completed and has been posted to the department website. I have the link to where it's posted in the minutes, but I also shared this yesterday, and Zach Blair with the department will be going into further detail about this after my update. The department is receiving a $2 million federal grant to provide additional services in response to COVID-19 over the next 16 months. The funding will be used to bolster the state's existing crisis services continuum, behavioral health safety net, and substance abuse treatment and recovery services. The department's grant proposal included a comprehensive implementation approach, which includes 5 facets: assessment, capacity, planning, implementation, and evaluation. Services will be planned, developed, and delivered with a special focus on telehealth treatment to ensure statewide availability. The department is also receiving almost $1 million from the federal government to support the mental health needs of Tennesseans living through the COVID-19 pandemic. The grant for $966,380 is through the FEMA Crisis Counseling and Training Program. The funding will provide outreach and support services in all 95 counties. Department staff will be working with community behavioral health agencies to deliver these services. And lastly, Tennessee's healthcare workers and first responders who are on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic response have a new resource to reach out to about feelings of stress, anxiety, sadness, or depression related to work. I believe Robin also included this in her update and her reminder email that was shared with you all. Mm-hmm. The COVID-19 emotional support line for healthcare workers is available to call at 888-642-7886. The support line is a collaborative project among the Mental Health Active Response Team, otherwise known as MHART, the Tennessee Association of Alcohol, Drug, and Other Addiction Services, also known as TADAS, the National Association of Social Workers, Tennessee Chapter, and the department. specially trained mental health professionals who answer calls through the line can provide emotional support through active listening, help callers identify and address basic needs, and provide reference tools for managing stress and making a plan for self-care. It is important to note the support line does not offer mental health treatment, and it is not intended to replace mental health crisis or suicide prevention services. And that's all I have. If anybody has any questions, and I'll include all those links in the in my update with Rusty.
All righty. Anyone have any questions for Kirby? Any comments? I always give a minute for people to unmute. All right. Hearing none, we're going to ask Zach if he would be kind enough to share with us the legislative summary. Zach, it's all yours.
Good morning. Thank you. Appreciate giving some time for covering the legislative summary, and always enjoy getting to be with you. I don't think I actually got to attend in person last year because it was sandwiched through a couple other meetings, but I'm glad to be able to finally join you guys on the call. So, again, thanks for legislative summary, I believe, was distributed to you. We also have a link on our website, and it's available. I won't go into as much detail as I have with previous councils, and reason why, I'm sure a lot of you know that the legislative session was a little strange this year. There was a large amount of time for a recess in the middle of session due to the COVID pandemic. The legislature adjourned in the middle of March and then came back in June. So it took a little while longer than it typically does to have all the public chapters published and for all the everything to be signed and enrolled. So I apologize that the summary was a little late this year, but we were working to get it out as quickly as possible. And luckily that got approved and posted last week. So you are one of the first councils that has been able to have this in hand when we've reviewed it. So I'll go through just a couple of the bills here, and then I'm happy to answer any questions about the legislative session this year or any bills that, that you believe are of interest. I'll happy to do that. I may need to follow up with further information if you have more detailed questions, but I'll try my best to get you everything you need during our time today. But you'll also notice, again, due to the funding and the compressed nature of the legislative session, the summary is not as long this year because not as many bills went through the entire process. So that's also something to keep in mind, again, due to the unusual nature of legislative session. But I'll start on page one, if you are looking at it. If not, that's okay. You can look at it another time. But under the mental health-related legislation, the last bill listed, which is actually not a bill, it was a joint resolution, which is a statement of policy or intent by the General Assembly. And House Joint Resolution 1 is a resolution that recognizes teen suicide as a health crisis in Tennessee. And I know that the folks in this group are aware that teen suicide has been a large issue in our state, and the legislature making a policy statement recognizing that is something that I think will be a value as folks outside of the behavioral health arena may not be aware of the serious problem that we have in Tennessee with young adult and teen suicide in the state. So that's something, and again, there are links to look at the text on all that. So that's the first bill that I'd like to point out to you. The second one, under substance abuse and controlled substances related legislation, starting on page two, the first bill I'd like to point out, Senate Bill 2202, House Bill 2269, was an administration bill that aligns state law with federal law when it comes to minimum age for the purchase of tobacco. I know most of you will remember there was a lot of media coverage around that, but the federal government raised the minimum age to purchase tobacco to 21 years old during the, I believe it was the winter of 2019. And I don't know if most people are aware, but the Department of Mental Health works with the Department of Agriculture, who is the enforcement authority in Tennessee over tobacco retailers, to make sure that the state maintains a minimum compliance level for underage sales at tobacco retailers. And the reason why that's important is some of the federal money that the department receives, specifically the substance abuse block grant funding, is tied to the compliance of retailers selling tobacco. So we participate with them in enforcing that with the underage compliance. And the Department of Agriculture did not think that they could continue to enforce the statute unless it was changed to align with federal law. So that was taken care of this year, and hopefully we'll be able to continue our work with the Department of Agriculture to ensure that Tennessee still has a very good compliance rate with underage sales for tobacco products. Senate Bill 2552, House Bill 2625 requires the Department of Health, Mental Health, and Substance Abuse Services and to collaborate and develop educational materials for providers and facilities who use MAT during treatment, specifically those that prescribe controlled substances to use for MAT. And this is really an effort to continue to make the public and providers and healthcare facilities aware of the NAS problem that we have, neonatal abstinence syndrome that we have in Tennessee. And so this will provide them some further resources when they're consulting with their patients and working with pregnant mothers, potential pregnant mothers or folks that are of childbearing age. So something that hopefully will be helpful as facilities and providers who use MAT when they're working with that specific population for NAS awareness. Senate Bill 1060, House Bill 656. There were two particular bills on this subject, and I'll try to differentiate them as best I can to avoid as much confusion. But there were two bills that expanded practice for advanced practice nurses or nurse practitioners and physician assistants in order to be able to prescribe buprenorphine for the treatment of opioid use disorder. We were the only state in the country that did not allow these particular practitioners to prescribe buprenorphine, and so this is a significant shift in our landscape, and the hope is that this will provide more access to individuals with substance use disorder to be able to receive treatment in certain settings. So Senate Bill 1060 and House Bill 656 deals with nurse practitioners and physician assistants who work in community mental health centers or federally qualified health centers. And it allows those practitioners to prescribe buprenorphine under several limitations, including having to work under the direct supervision of a physician with a data waiver. The practitioner themselves have to have a data waiver as well. The supervising physician can only supervise four nurse practitioners or physician assistants at the same time. And the nurse practitioners and physician assistants who prescribe the buprenorphine can only write prescriptions for up to 50 or fewer patients at one time. So, again, the capacity is expanded, but there are definitely limitations on those practitioners and supervision for those practitioners. So, definitely more detail in the bill text, but I wanted to hit the highlights for that specific bill. And then further, Senate Bill 1938 and House Bill 1980 does something very similar. It expands the prescribing authority for nurse practitioners and physician assistants in licensed OBOTs. So this, where the previous bill dealt with federal qualified health centers and community mental health centers, this particular bill deals with those practitioners that are working in licensed OBOTs that the department licenses. Similar requirements, you have to have an active DEA waiver. The supervising physician has to have an active DEA waiver. In this case, the supervising physician can only supervise two nurse practitioners or physician assistants at a time, but those practitioners and the licensed OBOTs can prescribe to 100 or fewer patients at the same time. So the capacity is the same, but the number of practitioners and the licensed OBOTs is less than what is allowed in the federally qualified health centers and community mental health centers. This bill also went a little bit further and prohibits cash only and prepaid credit cards or gift cards or other cards that are linked to a financial institution as the sole payment of services. So you can continue to use those to pay for a copay or deductible related expense, but licensed OBOTs will no longer be able to accept cash only as a form of payment. It also requires the licensed OBOTs to be credentialed and seek reimbursement for services and receive new patients through 10Care. So that's going to be a big change for the licensed OBOTs in this particular bill. But again, increased capacity is something that I believe will be a positive, and I think we as a department believe will be a positive, so we'll be interested to see how this impacts treatment of opioid use disorder in the next couple of years as we watch the impact of this particular bill. Senate Joint Resolution 181 declares that prior authorization requirements should be removed when a healthcare professional is seeking medication-assisted treatment for a patient with substance use disorder. This is another statement or a policy position by the General Assembly, and that's Senate Joint Resolution 181. It's really seeking to try to get an awareness about the need for parity when it comes to opioid use disorder and making sure that those are treated the same as other diseases. And it's specific. This resolution specifically mentions diabetes and heart disease as similar diseases that need to be treated. So that's something to take a look at, Senate Joint Resolution 181. Under the general health, you'll see that several programs were extended, the Cover Kids program, the Access Tennessee health insurance program was extended, and then you'll see an important bill, Senate Bill 2022, House Bill 2170, the annual coverage assessment act for 10Care, where hospitals put in certain funding and receive reimbursement. Or not reimbursement, but are able to draw down federal funds, and something that's really important to our hospital system throughout Tennessee. Moving down to the state government related legislation, most people are aware that all state agencies have to go through what's called a sunset process, periodically reviewed through an audit process. Our department is undergoing that right now. But as a result, the board of social work licensure during this previous session was extended to June 30th of 2026. So that will continue to be an entity that that is maintained under state government. And then going down to the criminal justice and juvenile justice related legislation on page six. There is a bill, Senate Bill 2734, House Bill. Yes.
This is Elliot. I was just going to say, do we have this document? I don't have it as far as I'm aware.
It was sent out in a.
Yeah, the link
was sent out.
I'm looking
at the email that was sent out. Okay.
Yeah, there was more than one email.
Oh, okay. I cannot find it, but if someone can point me to when that email was sent out, great. Otherwise, I see. Mm-hmm. It's down at the bottom of a third one.
Okay. Well, and Zach is continuing, and you're looking at that. I'll find out. I'll give you the time of the day. I believe it was yesterday.
I see it. It's yesterday at 4:08 p.m. It was lower down in the email. I see it at the bottom. Thank you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry for that confusion.
Ready to
yes, ma'am. Thank you. criminal justice and juvenile justice related legislation on page six. Significant bill, Senate Bill 2734 and House Bill 2517 revised several provisions related to the drug-free school zones, and specifically made changes to sentences related to that. So for those that are interested in the criminal justice reform that's been happening in Tennessee, that's definitely a bill of interest that I think a lot of people will be interested in taking a look at. That is all that I will cover or go into a little bit of detail about, but happy to answer any questions again about the legislative session in general, or if there are bills that that you see on here that you have a question about, happy to do that too. And I, again, very appreciative of the time, and let me know if I can be of further help.
Thank you, Zach. I'd like to make a comment. This is a council of a lot of professionals, practitioners, providers, but this council also does include, and I don't know if we have anybody specifically on the phone today or attending, that are family members and people with direct lived experience. And so what I want to say to you, any of those of you that may be looking at this and hearing all of this, as you go through this, you know, there may be things that are of interest to you, but you may not understand them. Highlight them. Come back to me. Come back to Zach. Come back to Elliot. Ask a question. There is no question that it's not no questions. There's no stupid questions. That just because you don't run in this realm and you may not understand some of the languaging, I just want to encourage you to ask questions, because these are the laws that affect your lives and the lives of your loved ones. So I wanted to share that. So having said that, does anybody have any questions of Zach? Okay, hearing none, I'm going to ask Elliot to give a summary from the Region 4 perspective. Elliot, would you please share as our chair, our legislative chair?
Sure, absolutely. And Zach, pardon the interruption there earlier. I was just taking furious notes and then connected the dots. So thank you for that great update. I appreciate all the work. Yeah, appreciate all your work and your team's hard work on all of these various bills and those that are not included on the list as well. I am just wanted to give a quick update on the legislative proposals that Region 4 presented. Last we spoke, we let you know about the proposals that were submitted. One was a recommendation to change the name of the Department of Mental Health so that the stigmatizing term substance abuse would no longer be included in that name, and that was forwarded. That was voted forward to move along to the commissioner for consideration to recommend to the governor. The commissioner reviewed it, and the response that we received was that the commissioner is very open to the idea, but does not see the timing as right here, and did not forward the proposal on further. And we were encouraged by the department to submit that proposal again next year. As an update, I wanted to let folks know that the timing seems actually relatively good on this in terms of where others are looking as well. There was a webinar that came out maybe a week or two later from the National Council on Behavioral Health, and I forwarded that along to Zach and other folks at the department for their consideration in case they wanted to take a look. Also, there has been a position statement released by the Society of Behavioral Health Medicine. The title of that document is called "In the Fatal Paradox, Change the Names of Our Federal Institutes on Addiction," and it covers the exact same type of issues that we looked at in our legislative proposal, and it's backed by organizations such as the National Council, the American Academy of Pediatrics, American Academy of Addiction Psychiatry, Drug Policy Alliance, and so on. So it seems like that proposal was dead on in terms of where things are moving, not just in Tennessee, but nationally, and hopefully the department will be able to consider that proposal at a later date, but sooner than later, hopefully. So we can certainly provide any support the department may need. So I hope that those department staff on the call will consider reaching out if there's anything that our legislative committee from Region 4 can help with. So On the next legislative proposal, there was one about related to behavioral health workforce shortages, and we proposed a budget neutral proposal that would involve surveying existing clinicians in Tennessee on workforce related issues. Because another state department was involved, I agreed at the recommendation of the department to withdraw that proposal, and it was moved to an action item for Zach at the department, who committed to both A, review this with the commissioner, which I believe he has done, as well as have a conversation with the Department of Health around this issue. The last update that I have on the matter is that the Department of Health is extremely busy, as we all know, as pretty much every department in the state probably is at the moment with COVID-19 and so on, and that the timing has not been right, and I am awaiting further update. So I guess I will ask Zach a question if he's still here. Is there any additional update?
Hey, Elliot, this is Kurt. I think Zach had to drop off.
Sure.
To get on another call. To my knowledge, there is not another update. Yes, Department of Health is busy just like every other state department, but I think we don't do them justice if we don't recognize that they are the point department for this whole pandemic. So they are aware that this is an issue that we want to discuss with them, and we're trying to find a good time to be able to do that, and we will do that as we committed to do.
Thank you. I just wanted to know if any action had been taken. So thank you, Kurt.
All right. Anything further, Elliot?
No. I wanted to pause, and if there's any questions from anyone else on the call about the proposals, I know I just sped through those at lightning speed. But we certainly had some good results from, you know, what we were doing. Nothing moved forward to the governor. But no proposals from any region did, and those from Region 4 were as successful as any others and have led to meaningful conversations, and we'll look at some continued action. So we had a proposal last year, too, that we hopefully can follow up with soon. I know the Department of Education is another department that has quite a bit on their plate, but we had provided some recommendations last year following a proposal to update the health education standards in collaboration with the department. We provided those recommendations to the Department of Health, and that was in January, and there has not been further action, but hopefully we'll have a chance to connect back with the Department of Education to see how they have reviewed those recommendations, the five recommendations provided by the work group, and if they plan to enact any of them or need any assistance from Region 4, the Statewide Planning and Policy Council. So if there are any questions, feel free to shoot. Otherwise, the only other things to keep aware of are there's a special session that the governor called for August 10th. So the legislature is going to be convening on that date, and they're going to be discussing three items in particular, as far as I am aware. One of them is COVID-19 liability protections for businesses, and that includes schools and healthcare providers, and I know there will be restrictions in there, but trying to avoid frivolous lawsuits, it seems to be the intent behind that legislation. The second item on that agenda is related to protests on the Tennessee Capitol grounds and trying to find some way to contain those or otherwise add some clarity to what's allowed and what's not. The third thing, which is very relevant to our group, is a telehealth bill that's expected to be considered regarding extending telehealth, similar guidelines as to what the current waivers and executive orders are allowing, where telehealth can be delivered without all of the arbitrary site requirements and so on for the ongoing future. So right now we have a temporary ability to do that, and the state is looking at making that more permanent in my understanding. And I think that certainly is very important for this group to be aware of, and hopefully we'll see some action there. So any questions from anybody in the group on anything I've said? Hearing none, the last thing I want to say is that it's really important now to consider where we are with COVID-19 and the state of behavioral health, if you will, and in general. So we already knew that we needed a lot more resources. We knew that prevalence was rising and we needed more providers. But I wanted to share just a brief piece of data that I think is very telling. I think it's a good talking point.
And Elliot, I'm going to give you about two, we'll have about 2 minutes to wrap up. So yeah, please do share. And then anything beyond that, we'll table or find another way to make sure that gets communicated.
Sure. The data point is just one data point. If there's a pulse survey going out from the U.S. Census Bureau that's published on the CDC's website. The baseline figure nationally, this is for symptoms, adults experiencing symptoms of anxiety or depressive disorder. The baseline from 2019 nationally is 11% for that metric. Again, 11% of adults nationally with symptoms of anxiety or depressive disorder. As of May 5th, that number was at 33% for Tennessee. At the end of June, that number was at 42%. As of right now, it's 43-44%. I don't have the exact figure. Actually, I do. It's 43.6%. So that number is skyrocketing, looking to be four times or more higher than it was at this point last year. And we are approaching nearly half of all Tennessee adults who are experiencing clinical symptoms, anxiety, or depressive disorder. So wanted to provide that information. It's certainly alarming, and it's something that we need to let people know about.
Thank you, Elliot. That is certainly a symptom of our times and something that I'm sure we're all feeling, and we all need to determine how we're going to be able to respond to that. So I thank you very much. Kurt, I want to thank you and Zach for all you do to put the information, and this goes for Elliot too. There's a lot of information out there. You guys do a great job at condensing it, trying to get us the most relevant and respond to our questions. For those of you that are listening, we don't need just to do this every quarter. Elliot has a committee, the legislative committee, and if you would like to be involved, if you would like to know more, then please reach out to Elliot. This is something that goes on in between the quarterly meetings, and there's a lot of activity because we've got so much in play right now. So please do feel free to reach out to Elliot Pinsley as our legislative chair with any questions, recommendations, and anything you think is something you'd like to get involved in or propose. So thank you all very, very much for
thank
that.
I'd
like to move on to our 10 care reports. I understand that we have Kubra with us, and it's so nice to be able to say that and to hear from her. So if you, would you please get us started on an MCO report from United Healthcare?
Thank you, Robin. Can you hear me?
Nice and loud and clear.
Okay, good. I don't have my headset on me. Yes, United Healthcare Community Plan have been working busily this COVID times, very hard for all of us. United Healthcare expanded telehealth with 10-care guidance and then increased support to providers who needed to transition patients between levels of care, and also provided targeted efforts on food deserts in Tennessee with UHC food box delivery, and have been holding weekly leadership calls with provider leadership, TAMHO, the department, and 10 Care to address COVID response, care barriers, and methods for ensuring access to care. So this is my report for this quarter from United Healthcare Community Plan.
Thank you very much, Kubra. That all sounds. And does anybody have any comments or questions for Kubra? Hearing none, we'll move forward. Thank you very much for all you're doing over there at United Healthcare.
Thank you.
Much appreciate that.
Thank you.
Do I have an Amerigroup representative? If you are here and can't get on for some reason, we'll move to Blue Care, and we'll come back to if anybody pops up. Do we have anyone from Blue Care on the call? All righty. Thank you very much. And we will make efforts with our communication for the next meeting. That we had a very extenuating circumstances that did not allow earlier communication. So we'll make every effort next time around to get to everybody sooner. I'm going to move on to committee reports at this time. I know we have Servine Johnson with us from the Children's Committee, and she is our Children's Chair. So, Servine, if you'd like to make a brief report of either what's happened or what you're looking forward to and any announcements that you have, please.
Hey, yes, good morning, everybody. And so we have not been meeting since the pandemic started. However, my plan is to reconvene in November and just try to encourage a lot more communication and discussion between the committee members or the people that attended the meetings to see if I can get them a little more engaged and maybe willing and able to participate on a Zoom call as opposed to meeting in person. So hopefully in November we'll get, you know, a little bit of a turnout and be able to start moving forward. So nothing new to report, just going to try to encourage more participation.
Appreciate that. And Servine, did you have an announcement that you wanted to share?
I did not, did I? Mention it to
you? Okay, there was something that you sent from SAMHSA around, I thought it was racial equality in children. And anyone that has any announcements that you would like to share, please email them to us. And then after, you know, any workshops that are going on or anything like that that you're aware of, you know, let us know. And after the meeting, we'll combine them and send them out to people. So and you'll also be given an opportunity to share. So, yeah, so thank you. Didn't mean to put you on the spot there. and Kirby, could you weigh in when we're using the subcommittees? Because I know that they're not as we don't have to hold them to the same standard necessarily that we do the Region 4 Council in terms of the requirements that Region 4 has to meet. Is a Zoom call that platform okay for the subcommittee, the children's subcommittee?
Hey, this is Avis, everyone. I'm not sure, didn't hear Kirby chime in, so maybe she's, I don't know if she's having, Kirby, are you there? Okay, she might be having.
I'm here. My mute button is acting up.
Okay. All right. You want to respond or you want me to respond? Kirby, go ahead if you like.
If you don't mind to, that would be great.
Okay. Yeah, no problem. So to answer your question, Robin, that is perfectly okay, particularly during this time for subcommittees to have their meetings via conference call, WebEx, Zoom, whatever type of virtual platform that is convenient for everyone to be able to do that. So as well to you, Servine. So that is perfectly fine to do that. No problem.
Okay, that's great. Thank you. I just wanted to clarify that because I know there are some things surrounding that govern the full committee, region, mm-hmm. Region 4 Council and other council meetings. So thank you for clarifying that. Appreciate that, Avis, and Kirby. Evelyn, is Evelyn Juergen on the call or anybody else that can speak to the adult committee? I know Evelyn is our co-chair for that committee. All right. I know this group was starting to, and they were just starting to get together and form a focus before everything hit. And we're still looking at some things, even after that. So hopefully we'll hear from them, and at some point we'll get you a report that way. All right.
And Robin, this is Avis. I just wanted to make one other comment. I do really encourage committee chairs or whatever other meetings that will pop up coming up going forward as you all begin to work on things for the department, such as the joint annual report or going into the needs assessment as you begin to talk about those. Hopefully we're looking forward to, you know, be able to meet in person, but considering what is going on right now, not sure when that is. So in the meantime, don't stop, don't halt anything. If possible, just continue to do business as usual as you have been doing in the past when you meet in person, and use those virtual platforms to continue business as usual.
Thank you, Avis. And this group, where they hadn't been meeting, and they were just starting to get their footing under them.
That's
and,
right.
And basically get reformed. So I know that in past conversations with Evelyn, they were just getting started. So I think we'll have some things there. I'll go back to Evelyn and find out a little more there. So what I'd like to do at this time, and I think we're on track, which is great. I really wanted to look at us as a group, and talk about and take time. This group is often made up of people who support other people, and I wanted to hear from you. We did a little bit of this last time. I'd like to do it this time. Things that I would like to hear from you are, how are you doing? What's happening in your sector? We've got so much going on with Black Lives Matter and the lens on racial equity. We have an opportunity here. We don't want to let this be something that we want this to be something lasting. And so so those are issues of concern and importance. So what I'd like to do at this time is I would like to go around the room and just have you introduce yourself, where you're from, what your concerns, opportunities, or triumphs have been, and just a, I mean, I know that's a mouthful, guys, but I want all of us to hear from you so that we can provide support, so that we can cheer you on in what you're doing, and that we can maybe join you in what you're trying to do. So I am not, you know, not having a list in front of me. I'm just going to ask you to go one by one, and I think I will point a finger just to get us started. And Angie, I'm going to pick on you. So would you kindly let us know what you're doing, particularly around COVID service accommodations, any of the things I've just mentioned. Give us a brief update on what's happening with you personally as far as what you're doing with the work you're doing.
Wow, that'll take more than just a minute. But let me start by just in terms of COVID in general within the health department. There is a COVID hotline that was brought up. I've spent some time working on that, and that's where people can call in for information about COVID-19 and about how to get tested. In addition, there's a results line that has been established, and those once someone is tested, they can, you know, contact the results line to get their test results, or there's an online portal that they can go to. I know there's been a lot of work done around contact investigations and then contact tracing. So contact investigation means that an individual has been diagnosed with COVID-19, they've had a positive test, and there's a protocol in terms of interviewing that individual, finding out what they need, and with a real emphasis on allowing, seeing what supports an individual needs in order to be able to maintain quarantine. You know, they may need to get medicine from the drugstore, they may need food, they may need just a variety of things. But so at that point, it's identifying what those things are and figuring out how to get that done. And then, you know, for the contacts, those individuals are, you know, defined by CDC And so if they have contacts that they know of that can be contacted, then those individuals are contacted as well from the health department. So I think from that standpoint, there's that in terms of the overarching. Y'all know there's a task force that the mayor stood up, and so as a part of that, Dr. Jahangir, who is our Board of Health chair, actually chairs that as well. So that's kind of the big picture. And then more specific to behavioral health is we're partnering with Centerstone, who got a disaster crisis counseling grant, to try to figure out the best way for the health department to partner with Centerstone so that we can support individuals who have been diagnosed with COVID, people who are concerned because they've been impacted, not necessarily diagnosed, but impacted by that. That could mean they lost their job. That could mean they had any kind of stressors. And we're in the beginning stages of putting that program together. So that's pretty exciting. And then the third thing I'd say is that the Behavioral Health and Wellness Advisory Council, which is appointed by the mayor came in June to ask the council to provide some recommendations specific to COVID-19. And so those have been submitted. And we're keeping an eye on where funding is and where we may be able to access any funding locally as a health department. BWAC can't access funding. They're not a legal entity, but the health department, we've got a lot of support internal with the health department from the health department. In terms of behavioral health, internal to the health department, we're expecting to stand up an opportunity for people just to be able to come in and talk to somebody, a staff member here on site, just to give people some more support. So I think that's kind of captures the big picture on that.
That's just excellent. Thank you, Angie. There's so much going on there. We appreciate everything that you are doing. You guys are certainly at the forefront and the cusp of everything. So we appreciate that very much. Is there anything individually that we could do to support what you guys are doing?
We're still on?
Yep, we're still on. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
I can't hear caller four.
Hello? This is Robin. Can anyone hear me?
I can hear you.
I think Angie's talking to someone else, maybe in the background.
No, I turned my speaker down in order to, so I wouldn't get feedback, and I didn't realize I needed to turn it back up so I could hear you. So
okay.
I'm sorry, I apologize.
Okay. All right. Well, in the interest of time, I'm going to go ahead and move on. But thank you very much, Angie. Who would like to take the next one? Just a brief update of what you're doing that is COVID related. Any announcements you have, and anything briefly you need from us.
Robin, how about an update from yourself? I'm very curious to hear everything that NAMI has going on.
So what we're doing, thank you, Rusty. So what we're doing at NAMI Davidson is we have had a 60% increase in the calls to our helpline. And as a result of, and the calls, the complexity has really increased. And so what we're getting primarily, what's been interesting is statistics that we're getting are the callers that we're getting are older. And by older, I mean we've had a significant increase in our 65-plus callers. And they're calling about family members who are older, who have had mental illness managed for perhaps a long time. They tend to be between 40 and 55. And because of COVID, their illness, their symptoms have really gotten out of control. So we're doing a lot of directing into the crisis stabilization units, into the ERs, the non-emergency police department number, crisis respite, things like that. And we've got an incredible call for housing. And I think across the board, we're starting to see some of that, where we're looking at housing for people with severe and persistent mental health issues. That's been something that's been rather consistent with us. Earlier in the game, it was anxiety and depression. but now the brunt of our calls are related to bipolar mania, schizophrenia, schizoaffective disorder, and PTSD. We're getting an increase in PTSD, people calling about that. We have we now have a support group. There's a support group available at least one every week. There's one tonight, and we have a mixed support group. They're online. You can find them by going to our website and going to the calendar on our website, namidavidson.org. You don't have to be diagnosed. Tonight's mixed, meaning it's family members and people with lived experience. So we've definitely increased that, and we are doing a monthly 90-minute caregivers primer on mental health caregiving. So that's been really interesting for us, is just being able to respond to the increase that we've had and work with our providers to get people to help. That's been a big part of what we've been doing. I would encourage you just to drive people to our website and that calendar, and just general information and referral on mental health. We've just been bringing them in and sorting them out to some of you folks. Any other questions on what we do and if there's anything that you need from us? I think a lot of people don't realize just how broad we are.
What can we as a group do to support you, Robin?
I think what you guys can do is just send people to the calendar. The calendar explains how they can get on with the websites. The other thing that we can use for general support is we've been able to manage. I've got volunteers that have come forward that are actually helping the field calls. Just understand that we're here with what we do, but we also we're looking for more volunteers. We really want to grow the diversity of our volunteers, and we're getting more calls from diverse communities and are responding to those calls. Eastern Indian, Kurdish, Egyptian, we have been working in the African American community. Seniors are culture. Cultures are defined, and you may hear outside noises here. Cultures are not just defined by race. They include gender and other things. So if you know people that are within different cultures that would like to volunteer with us, we would love to have them. So thank you, Rusty, for that prompt. And if I may, I'm going to turn it back around on you.
Sure. Much like you, my call volume has gone up. In the middle of March, we suspended face-to-face visits that I normally did, and I have now, in an 8-hour shift, I might be on the phone for 7 hours out of that 8 hours talking to various members that we have.
I believe it.
And I'm really concerned as things go on, what happens as time goes by and the peer centers continue not to open. It's my understanding that some programs have opened their psychosocial programs back up, but not their peer centers.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like we may have an opportunity collectively.
Yeah, because I didn't really realize till I talked to some of my members. I mean, I deal with people that they say they might go a week without contact with somebody else now.
I think that's really important. And for all of you out there, that's one thing that we're seeing is this, the isolation. We know clinically that isolation can be tough on people, and I think we're seeing that. Thank you for sharing that and bringing that to light. So, who would like to go next? We'll start calling names. Patrick, would you jump in for us? Do I still have Patrick Starnes on the call?
Yes, this is Patrick. I'm here.
All righty. What's going on with you, Patrick?
Well, just trying to maintain.
trying to adjust to everything that has been going on in our society. Social awareness, trying to make sure the guys keep their appointments. It's been a little hectic, but we're hanging in there. The help and assistance that we've been getting, we no longer get that, and it's totally understandable for our social distancing purposes as far as case management, helping out, assist, or with some of the resources the guys have outside of the house. But other than that, Robin, things are, you know, we're starting to adjust. We've adjusted very well. When situation first happened, I mean, I believe I aged about 10, 15 years and within a month's time. But, again, we're making strides to make a necessary adjustments that we need. And right now, you know, no complaints. We're just taking it in stride and doing the best we can. I want to shout out to you. The NAMI people, and definitely the department, been a great, great help, great benefit. I don't know if I would have, or the guys in my staff would have been where we are if it had not been for the assistance that we have gotten, definitely from the department and from yourself and Evelyn and people like you all that given me great recommendations on making adjustments and hanging in there for the most part and keeping me as mental stable as I could possibly be through this epidemic. So shout out to you guys who have reached out to me, who have assisted me, that I can be a help to those in the population of people that I serve in the community.
Thank you, Patrick. And have you seen an increase in the numbers? Do you have more people coming to you for housing?
I'm sorry, Robbie, you broke up on me. I don't know if it was my phone or yours, but I lost, couldn't hear everything you said.
Are you seeing an increase in the request for housing with your facility?
Definitely so. I am almost at capacity and maybe a bed or two available, but I have since March, opened up actually two more houses, and those at one time was completely full. So I'm thinking I may have a bed available, but I am receiving at least 3 to 5 calls a day about individuals wanting, needing a bed, and not just from one particular location. This is all around the state. I'm getting, got 2 calls this morning from Cookeville, Fayetteville, Columbia, just places that I haven't gotten them before. So yes, it's a very big spike in referrals and also direct phone calls, and I'm starting to think, how did all these people get my number? Where did it come from? But it's a spike. It's big spike. Again, at one time I was receiving 1 to 2, maybe 1 to 3. Now it's spiked to 3 to 5 calls a day of individuals needing a placement or needing a bed.
Thank you, Patrick. I'm going to echo that and say that we used to receive 30% of our calls from outside of Davidson County, and now we're up to 40% from all over Middle Tennessee and sometimes from either end of the state. Willie Ross, are you there to share with us?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
We'd love to hear from you.
I should let people know what I do.
Yes.
I'm a first responder and a frontline personnel for Nashville. So I do see the increases of the mental illness and the effect that COVID has had. There are a lot of individuals with COVID that are being test negative one time and then all of a sudden develop symptoms. I try my best to help the nurses who are on the front lines and to inform families. It's very hard for a family member to be transported by ambulance to the hospital and then realize that you cannot go. Or if you go to the hospital that you cannot go in the room, you have to stay outside. So I try to give as much comfort as I possibly can. There is an increase on overdoses. There's a new street drug that is out that it has 5 times the potency of fentanyl. And China is having a good time sending it over here, which is where it's being shipped from. One city is trying to make it a Schedule I drug. The strength for it is ISO.
Mm-hmm.
It's a synthetic opiate, and its derivative is already a Schedule I. And we're finding more people. It requires more Narcan. I'm also finding more people that are on the streets, on some of our calls, that already have the Narcan. So it's trying to educate individuals and trying to get them help and to go through the process of letting them know that they need help. Also, in educating doctors on what questions to ask them.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of people that are co-medicating that are not receiving their meds, and I try to make sure that they have the resources. They said, we haven't seen our doctors, we can't, but I also let them know that there's telemedicine. They are able to contact their doctors and work out a way of talking to them and seeing them. And I'm a peer support, so at the same time, I'm really helping our peers. And yes, I do take time out for Robin.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I take time for myself, I take time for family. And I also educate others that are working 2 and 3 jobs at hospitals that they have to, if their families are also first responders, which means working fire, EMS, or police officers, don't take it home with you. Don't ask them how their day was. Just give them 10 minutes. To absorb and realize, do the change and say, I'm at home. So work is work.
Mm-hmm.
I'm leaving it there. And it's, in a way, it's kind of hard, but it's working. We have more people talking about things and communicate mm-hmm. with each other. So
thank you, Willie. And what, and so, so I think one of the things you just said is important to us, which is maybe not just provide support, but not necessarily ask them to rehash what's going on.
Correct.
Just to give them some space. All right. I think that's
yeah.
very helpful for us to hear. So thank you for everything you're doing on the front lines. You know, you certainly are. You certainly got a. That window to that world, and I'm sure that's a hard window to look out of sometimes. But thank you very much. Who else do we have that would like to share, please? I think this I'm doing this because I think it's informative to us and also supportive, you know, to the group. And so that's what we know that you're supporting everybody else. Who would like to share next? Have we got anybody from TADIS on the line?
Yes, I'm here. This is Maria.
That's you, my bee.
Okay, Robin. I'm here. Yes, TADIS is moving right along. We have, most of you all are aware that Tennessee Suicide Prevention is now will be housed in our office, and we are all moving forward to transition to the opposite end of the building soon, and that's more into the fall. In terms of events, I've been trying to work on training And Robin, I will send you a list of those trainings that you could send out to everyone for Region 4 for the upcoming trainings that I have. I am doing a training. I have a training schedule around suicide in our older adults because we forget our older adults and what they're going through. And they're, which includes the isolation and not having anyone to talk with. And I worked with that population for about 5 years, so I get it, understand it, and read the book on it. So I know wholeheartedly. And then trying to manage 14 medications is difficult. So just trying to make sure we focus in on our older adults as well around substance use and having a better understanding of what's going on and what that looks like. So, yes, I hit the floor running. All of our trainings are virtual. And that's all from the whole – oh, one last thing. On September the 3rd, there is going to be an overdose awareness event. We will be sending out that information soon, and it's more of an education around going through the Narcan training as well as resources out in the community, what the ROPS people do, how do you connect if you want to increase the understanding of what the Narcan training is. Also, how to connect with folks around suicide prevention and going through those virtual trainings, as well as finding out what the navigators are doing. So we're trying to educate as much as we can out in the community. Robin knows that's something I do on a regular basis, and connect people. And I think we all need to be able to educate and connect folks in our community. That's all from TATIS.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we'll be looking forward to hearing about your move and certainly this event on September 3rd in addition to the Tuesday trainings that you provide. So thank you. Do we have anyone from either TSPN or MHA on the line? All right, then I'm going to get a little broader and ask about any other primary substance abuse providers that we may have on the line.
Hi, I'm on the line.
And who's this?
This is Rama.
I thought that was your voice. Please share with us what you've been up to there, Rama.
Pretty much, Paksana, we've been working from home, so a lot of the work I have done is just pretty much housing people, doing housing navigation, for subsidized housing, and also group home placement.
Rama, I'm going to think that your group home placement has increased mightily, because I know I and probably others have been sending people your way.
Yes, it has increased, and then also, like, the problem mainly is, like, these individuals are in, like, they receive, like, a minimum income, and the group homes, I think they have increased to 600, 600 to 700 per room, and some of these individuals are receiving maybe $800 and $700 SSI, so that has been, like, the hardest part of my job. Because once you place a person, you know, once they pay their rent, then they don't have enough money to get food or other supplies. So, yeah.
And what is happening with those individuals?
Pretty much isn't much that I can do other than, you know, applying for food stamp, which the food stamp office has been closed and they're working from home. That's like, has, you know, the hardest thing is navigating and getting a hold of other people. Because the hardest part is like just trying to get a hold of people because everybody's working from home. So the communication part has been very, 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 very hard.
Okay. Once you communicate, are you able to get assistance? Is it primarily the communication, or are you facing other barriers once you do get them?
We get assistance, and then the other thing is they limit the food stamp benefit, so it's very, very difficult to, like, for them to maintain that. And I empathize, you know, with my clients, because it's, if you have that limited income and then you might be getting $60 food stamp a month, then it's like, how do you survive out of that? So
exactly.
That has been a barrier. Yes.
Thank you for bringing, I think it's so important. These are people that we don't see. I mean, they're there, but we, I don't think we see them. And, because we don't know what to do to help them when our own hands get tied. And so I think it's very, very important that we hear just what you're saying, and we educate ourselves, or maybe the people that are, you know, finding ways. We're very innovative, all of us, in getting needs met and trying to figure out how we can, you know, get those services to those folks in need. So I think that you've just given some opportunity. And are you using the food banks? Are they active with these folks? Or what can we do to get more people to the food that they need? What are you doing? And maybe that can be a lesson to us.
You know, certain food banks, even the Ladies of Charity, they will provide, you know, limited amount of food, like, for Ladies of Charity, it's like 3 boxes a year. They do provide really good amount of food, but it's like 3 boxes a year. It's very limited. Very limited. So I don't know, maybe the focus, like Park Center has like an independent housing. I don't know if maybe focus on like opportunities, you know, to give grants to have more like independent living programs. Just like Park Center, you know, to have more programs that way, you know, if they pay, individual pay like $300 a rent, and if they have some money left, you know, to pay for, you know, food and soap and all of that. So it's just kind of, that's kind of like the thing that mostly bothers me when I house individuals.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Rama. We're hearing some of that on our helpline too. I'm sure others are. Thank you very much for bringing that to light. So we've heard from Park Center. Does anybody from the Mental Health Cooperative on the line? Do we have anyone from Centerstone on the line? All right. Who have I missed that would like to contribute?
Robin, this is Avis. I have a question for Rama. My question is, since the pandemic, are you finding that when you receive calls to place individuals in your supported living facilities that you have found?
Hello?
Avis, I think we lost the end of your question. Could you repeat your question? Avis, if you're speaking, we're not able to hear you.
Okay, I don't know what happened. Maybe connection got a little. Gimmick. Have you
there
had any issues? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you
now.
Okay. Have you had any issues with existing providers for mental health and supported living facilities to be hesitant about taking new patients or new clients in?
No, I haven't had any issues with that. Yeah,
that's good. Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
And Avis, what I'll say on our end is what we have found is no resistance from people that have space. But sometimes difficulty, you know, placing clients, just kind of what Rama was talking about, either they've got very low subsistence in terms of income, or they don't quite fit
you know, the what's needed in order to qualify. And so, like, you know, we will not, NAMI Davidson will not send people to the mission. It's been suggested to us on several of our callers, and we will not do that. We just keep trying to see where we can support and place people or direct them to. So that has been an issue. And thank you so much, Rama.
I'm sorry. Robin Patrick, I do want to make mention of something that was actually new to me, and that was an excellent question. What I have discovered, without being able to do assessments in person now for referrals, I've been having to do them, you know, just like everyone else as far as communicating, either Zoom or over the phone interview assessments before bringing individuals into the supportive living house. But what I have found within the last couple of weeks is a challenge. One gentleman that I have now did an assessment. Everything seemed to work out well. He was released from the hospital and wasn't told up front, my staff was not made aware of the challenge that the individual have with getting medication, getting his prescriptions filled. And I won't call, you know, any names, but this one individual, medication was sent an hour and a half away, sent to Manchester, Tennessee. He's coming to one of the houses here in Nashville, and what I discovered was there was a lock on his medication that they could only go to the specific pharmacy in Manchester, Tennessee. After doing some research, he could not get it. Well, he had to get the lock released or off a hold from TennCare. TennCare, in terms, had to call the state. And what I'm assuming is the gentleman had trouble in the past with abusing medication. And this was the only place that he could get his medications. I received the gentleman in, not knowing that, and the hospital sent the referral for medications to a local pharmacy here. Upon talking to the local pharmacy, they said, well, we can't fill it. We're not really sure. So, again, with the research that I had to do, even today, the gentleman has still not received medication. I've had him for over a week, and I've just really, really been hoping that he don't have severe withdrawals, but I've been watching him and staff watching him very thoroughly. But still today he hasn't had medication, and he had to put in a release form to have it lifted. So they stated through TennCare it would take 30 to 60, maybe even 90 days for this medication to be feel because the appeal process gave us appeal number to have it the medication lifted or unlocked through TennCare. TennCare said they were going to contact the state. So even today, I have not heard back. Waiting on a letter to come through the mail that he or someone on staff can assist them in filling out to send back in for this individual to get medication. Over the weekend, we made an attempt to take him back to the hospital to see if there was a temporary medication that he could receive. They stated, no, it's not an emergency situation. We don't do walk-ins unless he's referred. So here I am, me, my staff, and the client is in limbo. Without this individual receiving medication. I haven't had that happen before. And if anyone on the call can kind of give me some information on what's the best way to get this resolved.
So you can also have the recording.
Okay.
It's just a little overstimulating.
I can't hear
who I'm speaking, but yeah, they're breaking up. Since we can't hear that individual, this is Patrick Starnes of True Care. That if you can reply to Patrick via email with the information, that would be very helpful. And if we can identify who that is that's talking, it almost sounded like Kirby, or Avis.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't. Okay.
I was going to say, it was probably Kubra talking. Do you know, hey, Patrick, does this person have insurance?
Yes, he has insurance, Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Blue Care. Also, within that process, it was through Teen Care, they informed me that the individual had to do a change of address with security. All this is a part of that tedious process that we're having in order to get this individual some medication. And he's on some pretty high-profile medications, along with a seizure medication, along with, you know, some medical issues. And I'm just, you know.
Hey, Patrick, do you know Joan Jenkins with Blue Care,
yes,
with Blue Cross?
Yes, I know Joan.
Yes. Give her a call.
Okay, I will.
Like right now.
All right. Thank you, guys. Thank you for reaching out to assist. All right. I've taken this time. I know this is not something that we have always done with our meetings. I know that we have had speakers. I know that we've done other things. But I just think at this particular time, this is a valuable use of our time. If you have other things, we will look at a speaker for the next meeting. The leadership will get together and talk a little bit more about what we're going to do going forward. I would like to talk I would like to mention that we had focused last year when we did our survey, we had mentioned we were going to focus on needs assessment. And we completed the process for needs assessment, but what I'd like to do is send out something to you to look at needs assessment from a COVID view. And if that's going to be something that we, you know, may look at what we did and then look again and see if the needs that we determined prior to COVID are still in step with what we need now. So that is something that we will do going forward. At this time, I'd just like to see if there are any further announcements. I think we're about ready to wind down. I'm going to open this up to either Kirby, Avid, Angie, and ask if there's anything else that you guys think of. We've pretty much gone through our agenda, but if are there any other things that we needed to do? I know we do have Kirby, if you'll let people know that attend the announcement for the statewide meeting. And just give a little push to that, if you'll share that.
Sure. So our statewide planning and policy council meeting will take place Tuesday, August 11th, from 10 a.m. until 12 p.m. It's going to be held via WebEx. If you're interested in attending that meeting, please send me an email at kirby.fi@tn.gov so I can get that information to you. It's also available on the department website as well. We will have Dr. Bruce Davis available from the Department of Intellectual and Development Disabilities, who will be giving a presentation on assessment and mobilization teams. And Zach Blair will also be there to talk about the 2020 legislative summary.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Do we have any other meetings? Any other announcements that anyone would like to share?
Robin,
this
is Elliot. I just had a thing or so I wanted to say really quickly. I was waiting for others to give updates earlier. But I appreciate, I believe it was Willie who spoke about ISO and, the fentanyl and all these overdose issues that we're seeing and rises, and that's what I'm seeing in the data as well that's coming across. But I at least wanted to mention a resource that's completely free. I used to work at Centerstone, but I don't any longer. But I helped write a comic book before I left called Spark and the Dangerous Switch. It's available at no charge at centerstonecomics.org, and it specifically focuses on counterfeit prescription drugs and overdoses on medications like that include fentanyl, for example, and Narcan administration and things like that. So I wanted to at least point out that that resource exists. There's also other comic books available there. So if anybody has not ever seen that, has a younger audience that they work with, this is a resource that may potentially be helpful. Again, centerstonecomics.org. I also wanted to say that I co-chair the Tennessee Pre-Rest Diversion Coalition, and we had a meeting recently. There's a great dialogue going on about what we need to do in terms of mental health crisis response and how to work with law enforcement going forward. And I just wanted to say how encouraged I felt in that meeting and afterwards in many discussions with those who participated on how many efforts are going on already in Tennessee and more that hopefully will be happening soon around things like pre-arrest diversion and mental health co-responding, you know, programs in Memphis, for example. And I know we've got things going on in Hamilton County and Davidson County, a lot of good work being done with, I know, Angie and Mental Health Cooperative and Centerstone and many others are really getting their hands dirty and really trying to do everything they possibly can. So it's exciting to see that. I also want to let folks know that soon there should be a public announcement about the transportation grants that are being issued to sheriffs across the state. There was a formal work group that I participated in with probably several others on this call last year. Sorry. So $4 million recurring in transportation grants to sheriffs, and some of that is training dollars. This is to do transportation after the first certificate of need in a more humane fashion. So for those going to a psychiatric hospital. So I'm really excited to see those grants go out. My understanding is that more than 30 sheriffs across the state applied for funding under that programming. So very exciting and encouraging as well. Also want to just mention that I'm very excited about what we're seeing on televideo from emergency departments to the regional mental health institutes. That's something I know that the Department of Mental Health has been focusing on for quite some time, and they're seeing the results that they expected, which is reducing unnecessary trips and turnaways and by a great margin. So this is very important work that's continuing, and I know telehealth has its challenges, but I've certainly been hearing lots and lots about its successes, and we need to continue looking closely at these issues. If, you know, we hear of all these different people that are able to access care and stay in care longer because of telehealth, and we also need to be wary, of course, of those that are automatically just going from the provider's perspective to conversations on the phone without any video contact, as certainly that needs to be done if it's the only thing available. But, you know, there's just a lot to this, but we need to be focusing on it, and I hope it's something that we can look at as we start discussing our needs assessment. So just lots of great work going on, and I appreciate the work of everyone on this call and the Department of Mental Health and our leadership group here as well. So thank you to everybody.
And if I might, Elliot, ask you a question, the transportation with the sheriff's departments, was the nexus of that the bill that came out of Region 2 when they were promoting that? I know that was, I think they were trying to get private providers come for trips, but I also remember there have been various transportation with dignity initiatives, and I think my point is if this is something that came out of one of the legislative proposals that may have had a seed in that.
Great question. I can't speak to that. As far as I'm aware, no. But this developed from the Tennessee Pre-Arrest Diversion Coalition, which had been focusing on this issue and meeting with the Sheriff's Association and others, and then had a basic, like a one-day, I don't know, very informal summit, but we had leaders from all over and law enforcement from the department, the commissioner was there, and many others where folks, myself included from the Pre-Arrest Diversion Coalition and others, addressed the group on what we saw as needs regarding emergency mental health transportation. And then the commissioner called for a formal work group that made recommendations. And then this was taken up as legislation put forward by the Tennessee Sheriff's Association. That then led to this $4 million recurring pot of grant money.
Well, we certainly do appreciate it, and I speak particularly on behalf of the families and individuals that we are in contact with that have questioned, you know, why somebody has to be taken the way they are into medical treatment, basically, in the back of the police car. So I really appreciate those efforts. Does anyone else have anything that they'd like to share? I appreciate your participation today. But if we don't have anything further, I would just I'm going to stop for just a
Robin,
second. There we go.
Robin.
Mm-hmm. Maria, is that you?
Yes. I just wanted to pass on that I sent a flyer to you to share with the Region 4, and it is my annual training survey. And I know we have a lot of treatment providers on this on the Region 4 call and meeting. If you guys could fill out that link, fill out that survey for me, and this is for upcoming training for next year, I would greatly appreciate it. Okay.
All right.
Thank you, Maria,
for
your time.
Yeah, thank you very much. We'll send that out. We'll resend out the legislative summary in case you missed it off that other email. And I think, excuse me, we have a few other things that we may also be sending out. So thank you all for participating. Thank you all for what you are doing. You know, be good to you. Be good to others. I know you are good to others, but I think it's very important that you're good to you. I really would like us to make sure that we're supporting the supporters so that we can keep their well full and that they always have something to give not only to others but to themselves so that they can continue. Thank you, everybody, and our next is scheduled for November 4th, 2020 at 11 a.m. We more than likely will be WebEx, and since we have that available to us, we didn't have that, I don't think, available in the May meeting. So now that we know if that's something more available to us going forward, I certainly would like more of us to be able to participate using the WebEx format, if indeed we do that for November. So, all right. Thank you, everybody. We'll go ahead and, Kirby, did you want to do a roll call at the end, or I'm satisfied with what we did at the beginning,
did anybody join the call that wasn't able to state they were on the call at the beginning?
Yes.
Okay, what's your name?
My name is Mary Beth Heaney Gatte, and I'm with the Sexual Assault Center.
Hi, Mary. Thanks for joining today. Did I miss anybody else?
My name is Savick Millis, and I am with Renewal Health.
Oh, hi. Thank you. Anyone else?
Maria Smith, did you get me?
I didn't.
And
thank you.
Status.
Thank you, Maria.
Status. Uh-huh.
Okay, I think that's it, Robin.
All right, Kirby, thank you for being our WebEx Queen. Avis, we always appreciate your support. I don't know if Kurt's still on, but we certainly did appreciate him participating. And I want to send a shout-out to Rusty, who does a great job capturing so much of what goes on in these meetings. Thank you all. Like I said, be good to you, be good to others. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Robin.
Bye. Thank you, Robin.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye, everyone.
Bye, all.
Bye.